Morning. Today's Daf Me'ilas Gimel. Starting yesterday, the new Masechta and the concept of Me'ilah. Me'ilah is misappropriation, taking something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and making usage of it for myself. That is the succinct way of describing the Isser of Me'ilah, but there are many details. And over the course of these next 3 weeks, we're learning the details of the halachas of Me'ilah. Obviously, if something belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, you do not want to be violating Me'ilah. It's an Isser to do so. And if you do so there are consequences. We discussed yesterday the consequences of Me'ilah are that the benefit that you received, you have to make full restitution of that benefit, principal amount, plus you have to add also a chomesh, 25% on top of that, plus you have to also bring a carbon usham and usham Me'ilah. We noted yesterday that when it comes to carbonos, the rules of Me'ilah are slightly different than that of Betekabayis. When it comes to Betekabayis, so any kind of misappropriation would result in Me'ilah, although even that is going to be further refined later in the Masechta. We're going to touch on it today. When it comes to a carbon, however, the only part of a carbon that is subject to the Me'ilah is Kodshei Hashem. It's a pasuk in the Torah when describing the Isser of Me'ilah. And that means that it's the part of the carbon that is going to go exclusively onto the Mizbeach. So let's say, for example, we made this point yesterday. Let's just reiterate today because we're going to keep repeating these basic ideas again and again. That when it comes to a shlamim, for example, so a shlamim, when I was makdish the animal, so the animal is not going to be exclusively on the Mizbeach. In fact, part of the animal is going to be eaten by me, and part of it's going to be by the Kohanim, and part of it's going to go on the Mizbeach. But right now, at this juncture, there is no exclusivity of the carbon onto the Mizbeach. What happens, however, after the Shechita and after the Zrikas Adam, so as Zrikas Adam, now the Imurim are assigned and designated to go onto the Mizbeach. So when it comes to carbon Shlamim, the Isser of Me'ilah is only going to kick in after Zrika. And that's only for the portion that's going to go onto the Mizbeach, i.e. the Imurim. However, let's contrast that with a carbon with an ola or a chatos or nasham. So the moment you're makdish it, me'ilah, the isra of me'ilah is going to take effect immediately. Why? Because it's going to go up onto the mizbeach, and the notable exception is going to be by a chatos and a nasham, the meat of the chatos and the asham. Because after you do the zrikas adam, now the meat is going to be permitted to be consumed by the kohanim. But let's say, for example, a carbon ola. So carbon ola, the moment you're makdish it, so already there's going to be an isser of me'ilah.
What about the skin?
Right. Excellent point. The skin will not be subject to me'ilah. So that will be the only thing lifted. That's an excellent point. By carbon ola, when you do the zrikas adam, the isser of me'ilah will be lifted off the skin, off the hide of the animal. Okay? You're right. Okay. With all that stated, those are the basics. We started the first mission yesterday. We did the first daf yesterday. And what did we learn? We learned the Chiddush of Ula Merav Yochan yesterday. When an animal dies, a carbon dies, so Me'ilah goes away. Min HaTorah, Me'ilah goes away. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Meaning, once that it's dead and did not receive the benefit of a Shechita, so it's no longer, can be used as part of the Avoda, it's no longer a carbon, and so therefore the Isser Me'ilah has been lifted. However, that's Mid Da'araisa. Mid Da'Rabban and the Chachamim slapped a Din Me'ilah on it. Yesterday, the Gemara noted what's the difference between Mila Daraisa versus Mila Darabanan. Mila Daraisa, as we already pointed out, there are three consequences. That is Keren Chomish and a Karban Asham. When it comes to Mila Darabanan, it is only you have to pay back Keren. You don't have to pay back the principal value of that which you benefited. Okay, so that was the statement of Ula Amar of Yochanan. We also discussed yesterday a question of Rabban Rav Yosef, if I shecht a Karban Ola in the south. So obviously it's the wrong location. The Torah continuously tells us that a carbon ola has to be shechted b'tzafon, in the north side of the Azara. I take a carbon, I shecht it on the south side. So, can the Mizbeach tolerate such a carbon? Meaning, of course, lechatchila, at this point in time, you've disqualified it, you've shechted in the wrong location, and therefore discard it. However, b'di'evet, if I were to take this the meat of this carbon and offer it up onto the top of the Mizbeach, would the Mizbeach tolerate it? We saw yesterday, it's a machlokes between Rabba and Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is of the opinion, im alu lo yardu. If it goes up, it does not come back down again, meaning that according to Rav Yosef, Mizbeach can tolerate it. The significance of that, as we pointed out yesterday, is that means according to Rav Yosef, shechting a carbon in the south is subject to Me'ilah min HaTorah, according to Rav Yosef. Why? Because once you see that it has acceptance on the Mizbeach, it therefore falls under the category of Kodshei Hashem, and so therefore it's going to be subject to Me'ilah min HaTorah. We pointed out yesterday, according to Rabbah, im alu yardu, that if it goes up from the Mizbeach, you got to take it down from the Mizbeach. What does that show us? It shows us that according to Rabbah, it has no tolerance. The Mizbech does not tolerate it. And so therefore, it's no longer Kachi Hashem. And therefore, it's not subject to Mi'ila min HaTorah. Fine, it's not subject to Mi'ila min HaTorah. It's subject to Mi'ila min HaRabbanan. And as we concluded yesterday's daf, and I'm just reviewing, so that means that according to Rabbah, our Mishnah, which is talking about a case of Kashi Kashim Sheshachtim Bedarim, a carbon oil that was shacht in the south, our Mishnah says that it's subject to Mi'ila. The way to understand our Mishnah, it's only Mi'ila Midurabanan. So it's an oddity. We point this out yesterday. That means that according to Rabbah, our Mishnah is starting off with a case of Mi'ila Midurabanan. The opening Mishnah of Masechta Mi'ila is really a detail, meaning not just a detail, but it's not even... It's not even describing Mi'ila Daraisa, it's only describing Mi'ila Midrabanan. Okay, this is everything basically we covered yesterday, just in summary form. We are picking it up right where we left off yesterday. Mesu Namitanina. We are three lines from the bottom of Beis Amud Beis, and the Gemara is bothered by the following. And we pointed out yesterday, according to Rabbah, as we just pointed out, that the Mishnah is describing Mi'ila Midrabanan. So what then is being added by Ulam Rav Yochanan? Ulam Rav Yochanan says that when you have a carbon, it dies, it's subject to Mi'ila Midurabanan. Isn't that our Mishnah? And the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. There's a simple distinction. The Mishnah is describing a carbon where there was a procedural issue, meaning you did a Shechita, you just did in the south. Ulam Rav Yochanan is describing, no, there was no procedural issue. The animal just died. And since the animal just died, one can easily entertain the idea that the Chachamim are not going to slap a me'ila ban on the meat of that animal. It's nevela. Who's going to want it? And so that's what you would have entertained had it not been for Ula and Rav Yochanan. So Ula and Rav Yochanan taught us that there's going to be an Isra me'ila even if the animal died. Now, the Gemara is bothered because we think we know that already from the Mishnayos as well. Meaning, again, now it would sound like after learning this Mishnah we're about to learn, it's going to sound like Ula and Rav Yochanan are making a superfluous point, a point that was already made in the Mishnayos. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Hanena menachatzas kishi chai lama'al ad shivgom ukishihi mesa kem denena koshu humal. If you get benefit from a chatas, what happened over here, if you take a look at Rashi in the bottom of the Amud, Rashi says it's a balas mom. It's a chatas that got a blemish. So, kishihi chai lama'al shivgom. Now, we're talking about a carbon chatas that had a blemish in it, so it's no longer a carbon. It's no longer eligible for carbon, but it's still, of course, in the domain of the Beis HaMikdash. And so now we're going to learn a new halacha this morning regarding Mi'ila, and that's the following. As we already pointed out, when it comes to carbon, what is going to be the definitional point of Mi'ila by carbon? Kachei Hashem, like we've discussed already a number of times. When it comes to something that is no longer in the realm of a carbon, but it still belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, what is going to determine whether or not it's subject to Mi'ila or not? So let's take a look at the bottom Rashi over here. Rashi over here beautifully articulates. Kishichai lomal achi yivgam ad shiachsar mimenu. Dekevim kedushas damim hi lomal achi yachsar midameha. Kegon to shetosh menetzemer shecharish ba vihichisha. Once it's a bamom, so now it's kedushas damim, no longer kedushas hagof. And obviously it needs to be redeemed, but it's only kedushas damim. Now, when do you violate Mi'ila? So here we're going to learn something new right now. And that is, for something which is depreciating, you only are violating Mi'ila when you actually depreciate it. Meaning benefiting from it is insufficient. You have to benefit from it and actually cause actual depreciation. Rashi gives an example, you pull out some of the wool, or you plow with it, and it actually gets weaker when you plow with it. And Rashi goes on to explain, since it's now a blemished animal, it is no longer kedushas haguf, it's only kedushas damim, v'kaimalan, and we've established, kol ha'omed ledamim, ein mo'alim bo, ad sheyechsar midamav. Anything which is a value kedushas damim, and it's depreciating, you only are going to be subject to Mi'ila when you depreciate. But let's say something which doesn't depreciate. Rashi gives the example of a gold cup. Right? A gold cup, it's funny because, you know, at least the silver in our house, like, right, it does tarnish. But the assumption is that if it's something which is a durable good, like a gold cup, so there, in terms of violating Me'ila, it's not going to, the violation of Me'ila does not have to come with a depreciation. There, it's just simply benefit. As long as I have benefited the value, and we're going to have to attach it, we're going to assign values for benefit. But that's easy, though. In other words, just think about how much I would pay for this benefit, or how much this benefit would cost on the market. Whatever, we'd attach a value to the benefit. There, by a durable good, the violation of Me'ila is only going to be when I benefit from it and I don't need the item to depreciate. Okay. Ukshi meitza d'lavla d'mei kaimei, d'impodim esakashin la'achilas klav, m'kevin shenene b'sheva pruta, ma'af api shalo chisru. Now, so interesting. When the chatas ba'al mom is still alive, so it's a depreciating item, and since it is a depreciating item, Me'ila only comes in the form of when I actually depreciate its value. I pluck out its wool, I work and weaken it, fine. If the chatas were to have died, now remember, we're not talking about the classic chatas mesa. We're talking about just a standard carbon chatas that had a blemish and then died. Now, its carcass, it's so interesting. I mean, once you know your categories, this is really accounting. Accounting 101 for Me'ila. Once you know your categories, it really makes sense. It takes a while to just get our brains to, train our brains to think in this manner. So we have two categories, depreciating values and things that don't depreciate, like a durable good. When I have this chatas, blemished chatas that died, so now it's no longer considered a depreciating value. Why not? So Rashi explains over here, because as a dead carbon, right, it was a carbon, it then was blemished, and then died, what are you going to do? You can't redeem it, because you're not allowed to redeem a carbon where its only purpose is going to be that you're going to be able to feed it to the dogs. It's a novella. So ukshi mesa, that's what Rashi writes. Ukshi mesa, lo l'demei kaimei de'ein poden esakashim l'achilas klavim. Kem shenena b'sheva pruta ma'al. So there, all you need in order to violate Me'ila is just hana'a. And you don't need depreciating value. Okay. I know, it's a bit of an oddity, but that is the two categorizations of getting, of violating Me'ila when it comes to damim, as opposed to something with Kedusha Seguf like a carbon. With all that stated, let's go back to the Mishnah. Let's see the Mishnah again. Hanana menachatas kishichai lo ma'at shivgam. So when the animal's alive, Me'ila only comes about when you actually depreciate its value. Ukshi mesa, when the animal's dead, kim denana koshuhu ma'al. And any kind of benefit, even if it doesn't depreciate its value, so then you are immediately going to be in violation of Me'ila. Okay, now, Salgadas Chamin, as we now turn to the top of Gimel Amad Aleph, Chatas, Hola Chapar Ka'asya, Lo Bidilamina. So the Gemara goes on to explain that, look, here's what I would have thought. Meaning, what have we just shown in this Mishnah? We've shown in this Mishnah that there is an Isser of Me'ila by a Chatas. A Chatas had died. Isn't this now render Ula and Rav Yochanan superfluous? And the Gemara is basically saying, no, it doesn't. Because I might have thought that when it comes to the chatas, hola chapar ka'asya, look, what was the purpose of the carbon chatas? Purpose was kapara. So lo bedila mina. So the Gemara says that people are going to be more attached to it because its whole purpose was kapara. Avakachem ho v'laftla kapar ka'asya bedila minon v'lesbu mi'ila. But if it's just a standard carbon, it doesn't provide kapara, and the animal dies, so I would have thought, okay, so then the chachamim are not going to slap an isra mi'ila. People are not attached to it, not like the carbon chatas. Carbon chatas, people are so attached to it. It would have provided kapara. Okay, we get connected to things that are going to provide a kapara for us. But standard carbon, which doesn't provide kapara, and it dies, the chachamim would have felt no need to issue a mi'ila derabanan on the carcass of that animal, kamash malan. Chatas shemesa, I'm sorry, kamash malan, period. So that comes to teach us that the Ula and Rav Yochanan coming to teach us that the din mi'ila midrabanan is going to be true even by a regular carbon, a non-chatas carbon. Okay. V'chatas mesa mi'is be mi'ila. The Gemara continues now. Is it true by chatas mesa? A chatas that dies is subject to mi'ila. V'hatanan, the Gemara says, what about the following Mishnah? Chataus ha-mesos. Umaus ha-ochos le-yamamach. Now, here in this Mishnah, obviously, we are describing the traditional, the classic chatas ha-mesa. Chatas HaMesa scenario in which somebody set aside a carbon chatas and for various reasons it's no longer needed. Its owner died. It's the offspring of a carbon chatas. Tmuras chatas, chatashe, shekipur ba'acher. Oh, okay, whatever. There are five scenarios in which the chatas is consigned for death. That's the chatas amesos. Or money that was set aside for a carbon chatas, and again, for any of the reasons that we just described, well, not all of them. In other words, you're not going to have vlad chatas by money, but still, chatas shemesu ba'ala, where the owner died. So if the money was set aside for carbon chatas and the owner died, so what do you do with that money? Same thing you would have done with the carbon chatas. Carbon chatas would have been consigned for death. The money also is going to be destroyed. You throw into Yam HaMelech. The Mishnah tells us, it's a Tosefta, that when you have chatas amesos and mazal ochos Yam HaMelech, lo nenin v'lo ma'olen. So it is not subject to Mi'ila. Now you're not allowed to benefit from it. And by the way, sometimes what that means is that there's an Isra Mi'ila Midurabanim, but the Gemara over here is assuming that's not what it means. It means that there's no Isra Mi'ila on it whatsoever, not Midaraisa, not Midurabanan. However, you're just not allowed to get benefit from it, lo nenin. Okay, as a separate Isra. Makes sense, meaning it was a carbon chatas. Obviously, now it's going to be destroyed, but you're not allowed to get hana from it. It once upon a time was a carbon chatas. Now, what have we just learned together? That for the traditional, for the classic chatas amesos, there's no din mi'ila. Not midaraisa, not midarabanan. That goes against everything we've been saying up until now. Up until now, we said that when it comes to a chatas that dies, mi'ila. When a standard carbon that dies, mi'ila. Even though it's true, the mi'ila is going to be a mi'ila derabanan, but at least there's some mi'ila. This price is telling us that there's no mi'ila when it comes to the chatas amesos. Amre, when they, meaning the B'nai HaYeshiva, heard this discussion, they said, chatas amesos, bechayen b'dilam minhon, lafukei de mechayim lo b'dilam minay. So the Gemara says, well, look, chatas amesos, there's already enough of separation between the owner and it so that there's no need for the chachamim to slap a din me'ila on it. Already while the animal's alive, people know to distance themselves from the chatas amesa. Look, once it's a chatas amesa, that means it no longer serves as a karban. And this didn't happen when the animal died. The status already began while the animal's alive. Right? Let's say, for example, its owner died. The owner died now, so while the animal's still alive, it is now DQ'd. Right? At that point in time. So the truth of the matter is that now when it dies, it's not like we've now for the first time have distanced ourselves from this animal. We already distanced ourselves from the animal already while the animal is alive. So there the Chachamim did not feel a need to ban it with a Me'ila ban after it's dead because this is not the first time that we have to distance ourselves from it. Okay, so it really touches on the issues of the Chachamim feeling when do we need to put a fence around and have people distance themselves from it? As opposed to something like this, the chatas amesos, where already people have habituated themselves to not coming, not using it, making usage of it. Okay, now, we're going to go back to the discussion of Rav Yosef and Rabbah. So let's reacquaint ourselves with that machlokas. That was yesterday's daf. It was the top of Beis Amud Beis. Remember, Ibayilahu, I'm just going back, just looking back on the previous Amud. I'alu mashiyardu. You have an Ola, shecht in the south, that wrong place to shecht it. And then I went through, right, you plowed through the rest of the Avodas, right? You did the Kabbalah and the Holacha and the Zrikas Adam. And again, all that you shouldn't have done because you did the Shechita in the wrong location. But you went through with it anyway. And now you took the carbon and you put it up onto the Mizbeach. Should it remain on the Mizbeach? So that was a machlokis yesterday between Rabbah and Rav Yosef. Rabbah says, Im Alu Yardu. Rabbah is of the opinion that that Mizbech has no tolerance for it. And Rav Yosef says, Imalu lo yardu. And Rav Yosef says, look, it was shechted in the Azara, I'll beat it in the wrong place, but if it goes up on the Mizbech, it remains on the Mizbech. Okay? The Gemara now notes, Eisvei Rav Yosef la Rabbah. So this is going to be a challenge directly from Rav Yosef to Rabbah. Chad migo chada v'chada migo chada. Now, to construct this question, what we're going to be doing is stringing together three Mishnayos. We will learn three Mishnayos. Two of them are in succession in Gemara in Zvachim, and the third one is actually in the following Perek in the Gemara in Zvachim. And by looking at all three of these Mishnayos together, it will come out that it does not seem that Rabbah has a tenable position. Mishnah number one. V'kulan imetamim begadim ha-beis ha-bliya mo'olam ba'em chutz mi-chatasof she'asalamata kemaisei chatasof l'shem chatas. So, I know I read that Mishnah awfully quickly. The Mishnah over there basically says like this. When we have the birds, so there again, as we have discussed time and again, when it comes to birds, there are only two birds that can be offered as a carbon, a chatas and an ov. And by the way, right side point, there are only two types of birds that can be offered as a carbon, the tor and the benyona. Fine, but in terms of the type of carbon that can be brought from birds, it's only chatas and ola. Now, in terms of procedure, so the procedure of the birds is actually very clear cut. The chatas bird is going to, you're going to be doing a, you're going to do malika, pressing your thumb, the Kohen's going to be doing this, pressing his thumb into the back of the neck of the bird, and then sprinkling the blood on the lower portion of the mizbeach. When it comes to the ola bird, so is same thing. There is differences in terms of how far you go into the neck of the bird, but not for now. We're just right now focusing on the location on the mizbeach. When you do malika for the ola bird, it's going to be sprinkled on the upper portion of the mizbeach. By the way, it's a little bit confusing only because when it comes to animals, it's the opposite, right? The chatas animal blood is sprinkled on the top of the mizbeach. The ola blood of an animal is sprinkled on the lower half of the mizbeach. So for birds, it gets inverted. Fine. The Mishnah over here is describing the following scenario, and that is, I did malik on the bird, and I sprinkled the blood on the wrong half of the mizbeach. So that means that for the ola, it was done on the lower portion. And for the chatas, it was done on the upper portion. And I will, you know, I'm not going to excuse the behavior, but the but I will explain it, however, because it's the opposite for animals. So I can, you know, I can imagine the Kohen got a little bit confused. Anyway, the point we're making now is the following. Even though the malika was done on the wrong half of the mizbeach, the malika is still considered a malika, i.e., the bird now is no longer a nevela. If the malika was done totally incorrectly, let's say for example, malika was done for a bird outside the Beis HaMikdash. So that malika would render the bird a nevela. You now consume a kezias of that bird, you're subject to tumah. That's tumas of, tumas nivlas of tahor, and it's metame bebeis abliya. You ingest a kezias of bird that was not shechted properly, so you're tummy. That is metame begadim abeis abliya. The reason why it says begadim abeis abliya is because the tumah is so serious and severe that when you ingest the meat of this bird, not only do you become tameh, but the clothing you wear at the time also becomes tameh as well. Anyway, the point that we are gaining from the Mishnah is the following. That when I do the malika, even though I was in the Azara, I was next to the Mizbeach, but I was on the wrong half of the Mizbeach, and I sprinkled the blood on the wrong half of the Mizbeach, we still give a check for the malika. The malika is still a successful malika. That's the first Mishnah that we're learning together. Also, it's going to be subject to Mi'ila. Because remember now, it's an Ola bird. Now, I understand it could be a Chatas also. And we're going to come back to that in just a moment. But an Ola bird, what do we know by carbon Ola? It will be subject to Mi'ila before the Malika, after the Malika. The only time the Mi'ila is going to be lifted is only Acher Nase Mitzvaso. After mitzvah is performed, i.e., you burn the bird on the top of the mizbeach. Only once the bird has been reduced to ashes, then the Isra Me'ila goes away. By the Chatas bird, so the Isra Me'ila remains unless the bird was nimlak successfully, correctly, i.e., it was done on the lower portion of the mizbeach and sprinkled on the lower portion of the mizbeach. So now the meat of the bird is no longer subject to Me'ila because obviously the Kohanim can now eat it. That's exactly what the Mishnah is teaching us. If I do the chatas of correctly, so then Me'ila goes away. Okay, that's Mishnah number one. We're up to now Mishnah number two. The Ketani Ilave. So this is the successive Mishnah over there in Zvachim. If the psul were to occur in the Kodesh, in the Azara, so that means that the Malika was successful, and so therefore it's not a Nevela. Again, that's the expression of Einu Metame Begadim HaBeis HaBliya. However, if the psul was not Bekodesh. Now, what does that mean? Rashi gives examples of psulo shelo Bekodesh. Examples would be that the bird was disqualified well before it even came into the Azara. Rashi gives examples. Let's say it had a mum. Now, birds, by the way, are not as sensitive to blemishes as animals are, but there comes a point in time where the bird is just simply not going to be able to be offered as a carbon. For example, it's missing a limb. So if the bird is missing an entire limb, that is a mum as it relates to birds. That is where the mum preceded the it going into the azara. So under those circumstances, metame begadim abeis ablia. The malika is going to be rendered meaningless, meaning it's not a avoda action. Therefore, the bird is going to be rendered an avela. And therefore, if you ingest a kazayis of the bird, so you're subject to tumas begadim tumas nevela. Tumas nivlas of tahor. Okay, anyway, that is Mishnah number 2. So far, what we have now looked at together are 2 Mishnayos. Now, these 2 Mishnayos are relating to birds, obviously. Now, we're going to introduce a 3rd Mishnah, Vikitani. Okay, now this Mishnah over here is talking about animals. But by having seen the 2 Mishnayos prior regarding the birds, now we know proper context. Meaning the previous 2 Mishnayos has now taught us that what we're saying, psula v'kodesh, what we're referring to is wrong location. When we were describing the birds, we were talking about the chatas was done above. And the ola was done below the chutasikra. So we now know, based on the mishnayos of the birds, that we're talking about where the location was the wrong location. So now when we encounter our 3rd Mishnah, now we have the proper context. When the Mishnah says, Kol Shei Apsula B'Kodesh, Imalu Lo Yardu, so now we know that contextually it's talking about wrong location. Now when it comes to an animal, what do we mean wrong location? Meaning, it's an Ola, I was supposed to shecht in the north, and I shecht in the south. Wrong location. And what does the Mishnah tell us? Imalu Lo Yardu. Now if it goes up, it doesn't come back down again. Now if you're Rav Yosef, perfect. That's exactly what you thought, expected the Mishnah to have said. That's what Rav Yosef said in the previous daf, in yesterday's daf. Now, if you're Rabba, so obviously this Mishnah presents a problem. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Tiyufta de Rabba, Tiyufta.
But you're talking about Yurika in one case and Shechting in another case. Yeah. What is the location?
Yeah. But even though we are talking about Zrika, we're talking about Zrika and Malika. Meaning the Malika and Zrika, which are done, right, which are done contiguous to one another. So it's really both. And so in that regard, Malika and Shechita are obviously related. Okay. Now it's funny, the Gemara ended the debate, but the Gemara assumes that they're still debating, even though it was a knockout to Rabba. Okay, but anyway. Now the Gemara now notes that Rabba and Rav Yosef are debating this issue. Rav Elazar, he wasn't moved by this issue at all, or he wasn't bothered by this issue. How do I know that? Because Rav Elazar asked a question. Now, the question that he's about to ask is such a detailed question. The Gemara is therefore assuming that his question is obviously based on assumptions that he feels are good assumptions. And so the Gemara's point is very simple, even though the question itself is going to be a little bit complicated. Being that Rav Elazar asked such a detailed question, so his assumptions are either Rabba's right or Rav Yosef's right. By the way, the Gemara doesn't even indicate which position he subscribes to, but whichever one he subscribes to, he clearly thought that it was not an issue. Okay. Now, in order to appreciate Rabbi Elazar's question, just a little bit of background. This takes us back to the end of Masechta Zvachim. There, at the end of Masechta Zvachim, what did we learn? There were times historically where we could have a bama right in our backyard. Okay. Nowadays, we have a grill in our backyard. Back in the day, but it was limited historical times. It was only when there was no Mishkan or there was no Beis HaMikdash. So for the 14 years between entering into Eretz Yisrael and Chalukas Haaretz, so the Bamas were permitted. After the destruction of Shiloh, so then for 50 some odd years, so also the Bamas Yachid, private Bamas were permitted. So truth of the matter is that we do spend a lot of time talking about it in the Gemara, but historically speaking, it doesn't even cover a century of Jewish history. Anyway, notwithstanding, there was a time where Bamas Yachid was allowed. When you offer karmen on a Bamas Yachid, so there are a lot of things that you don't need. For example, you don't need a kohen. Okay? In other words, I could offer it. Number two, if it's an Ola, there's no north side, south side. North side, south side is a function of being in the Azara and having walls around you. But, in other words, obviously, you know, I could still, in my backyard, point to the north and the south side of my backyard, but there's no such demarcation. You can shecht an ola anywhere in your backyard. There's no limitation. So and those are just examples. There are other rules also that don't apply to a bamas yachid. With that stated, Rav Elazar asked the following question. Let's say olas bamas yachid sheichnisu lifnim. So let's say it's an olas bamas yachid. So it's a carbon ola that I was planning on bringing in my backyard, And then after I was makdish it, but before I shechted it, change of heart. You know what? Why am I doing it in my backyard? I'd rather go to the central location. Even during the times where the bamas were permitted, there was still a central mizbeach. For 14 years after entrance into Eretz Yisrael, it was in Gilgal. During the 50 some odd years between Shiloh and the Beis Hamikdash, there were two locations. It was first location was Nov, and the second location was Givon. Okay. So Nov, by the way, had it, but then Shaul killed all the Kohanim of Nov, so then it moved to Givon. Anyway, so I had it in my backyard, and then change of heart. And now I'm going to bring it to one of the central locations, either Gilgal or Nov or Givon. And there, obviously, being that that's a communal, Bamat Sibur, so therefore now it has to conform to all the rules. And now there's a north side as opposed to a south side, etc., etc. I need Kohanim to do it. I can't do it. Again, etc., etc. So that's the question of Rav Elazar. Like I said, it's an extraordinarily detailed question. So Olas Bamas Yachid Shechnisu Lifnim. So it was an Olas Bamas Yachid where I changed my mind and I decided to bring it into the Azara. Kaltua Mechitzos L'chol Davar. So now that means to say that the walls have absorbed it for everything. Right? To borrow a cliche. When in Rome, so right, act like the Romans. So when this carbon, which originally was a Bamas Yachid carbon, now goes into a central location, a communal location, so therefore it is going to be it's going to have to follow all the rules of a Bamas Sibur. So Katu Mechitzos L'chol Davar by Rav Elazar. Olas Bamas Yachid Shechnisnu Shenifsala Alu Mashi Yardu. So now Rav Elazar asks a super detailed question. So let's say it was its genesis, its origination was that it was an Olas Bamas Yachid, and then it was brought in, and then it becomes disqualified. Alu Mashi Yardu, meaning he already knows. If it started off as a Ola of the Bamas Sibur, so he already knows what the conclusion is going to be. Whether Im Alu Yardu, Im Alu Lo Yardu. And by the way, as Rashi over here points out, the Gemara doesn't even tell us which way he follows. But he already knows that. The question now is that because this Bama originated as a Bamas Yachid, and because at its point of origination, it didn't have these strict guidelines of north versus south, so when I now introduce it into the Azara, and I shecht in the wrong location, and I put it up onto the Mizbeach, so because it originally started off as a Bamas Yachid, that didn't have these guidelines, so therefore, when they're now brought on the Bamas Sibur, is there going to be more latitude regarding such a carbon? That's the question of Rav Elazar, and again, I know I'm repeating myself, a really detailed question. So now the Gemara is going to point out. So the Gemara says, by virtue of the fact that he's asking such a detailed question, meaning he already knew, his starting point was already an assumption. He already knew, either like Rabba or like Rav Yosef, the Gemara doesn't say which one, but whichever one. So he already knew what happens if this animal would have started off in the Bamat Sibur. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. So the Gemara says it could very well be that, no, he was just asking layered questions. He asked one question, what if my carbon started off as a carbon Sibur? And then he asked that question. Maybe he was not sure of the answer. And then he, on top of that, built on top of that another question, well, what if my carbon didn't start off as a carbon Sibur? What if it started off as a carbon Yachid? Not having these regulations of north versus south, so therefore, can we be more makel in such a scenario? And the Gemara just simply spells out, that's the way Rav Elazar was asking. He didn't assume one way and therefore go and advance the discussion. He was asking a question and then a question on top of that. So maybe, in other words, and the Gemara is just simply formulating. Meaning, maybe I hold like Rabbah. He doesn't know. But maybe I hold like Rabbah that im alu yardu, that is because mechitza kitikna pasla. Because it started off in the mechitza. But shalokitikna lo pasla. But my carbon, which started as a yachid, a carbon yachid, so didn't have these regulations. So maybe there's more room for maneuvering. Odilma filu Rav Yosef damer imalta lo seired. Or maybe we'll start like Rav Yosef, where if it goes up, it should not come down. Mechitza kitikna kalta. Shalokitikna lo kalta. On the other hand, if the carbon did not start in the azara, i.e. was bamas yachid, maybe that be room to even be more machmir. Because it didn't start in the in the walled mizbeach. Teku the Gemara now leaves all these questions unresolved. But the point that we wanted to make, that Rav Elazar knew, either like Rabba or like Rav Yosef, is not necessarily true. He didn't necessarily limit himself to one of those two positions.
There's ever a time of story with, there's a machitza, so to speak, and Balaz Yachid?
No, that's exactly the point.
It's purely academic.
Right, it's exactly the point, meaning that there's no north versus south. There's no requirement of north versus south. And then the only question that Rav Elazar was dealing with is if I took said animal and brought it into a Bamet Sibor where there is a north versus south, so does it take on those regulations? I'm Rav Gidol Amarav. One more discussion point for today, and that's the following. Okay, again, a quick refresher. When it comes to a karban of, let's say, a chatas or an asham, so what happens with zrikas adam, with successful zrikas adam? So the iser of me'ila is lifted off the animal, or I should say better, off the meat of the animal, because now it's able to be eaten by the kohanim. Let's go with the shlamim. By a karban shlamim, what happens with the zrika? With zrika, the iser of me'ila now lands on the animal, and specifically the imurim, which are going to now go up onto the mizbeach. Again, the just to remember it better, the overarching point is that when it comes to a karban, that which is subject to me'ilah is only kachay Hashem, that which is going onto the mizbeach. So if I can identify which part is exclusively going to go onto the mizbeach, that is subject to me'ilah. By an ola, all of it. By chatzos and asham, the imurim, all of it before zrika, and the imurim after the zrika. And when it comes to a shlamim, only the imurim and only after zrika. Okay, now, that's background. That's what we need to know. Now the Gemara wants to know, what if by zrika, the Kohen was mefagel? He had a machshava of chutz zmano while he was doing the zrika. Now, of course, we know that DQs, that disqualifies the carbon. Carbon, the Kohanim are not allowed to eat it. Nobody's allowed to eat it. In fact, if anyone were to eat a Kohen that went through or that underwent pigel, it'd be subject to the Kari's penalty. Fine. The question on the table is that now that we did this procedurally, everything was good. But because of the machshava pigol, so now the carbon's been disqualified. Since the carbon's disqualified, does that mean that the me'ila status is going to change? So on one hand, we went forward with the procedure. On the other hand, because of pigol, so it was not a successful carbon. And so therefore, maybe the status of me'ila doesn't change. Rav Gidol Marav takes a very decisive position on this issue. Zrikas pigol, eino motzi midei me'ila b'kachi kadashim, eino mevi lidei me'ila b'kachim kalim. Because the zrika was done with pigol, so therefore, status does not change at all. If it was kachim kalim, no me'ila on the imurim. If it's kachi kadashim, the iser me'ila is not lifted off the meat of the chatas and the asham. Good. Huh? Because pigol means now that the carbon is disqualified. And now the Kohanim are not allowed to eat it. And since the Kohanim are not allowed to eat it, it's now no... The zrika of chatzos and asham removes pigol because Kohanim are able to eat it. And Kohanim now are not able to eat it because of the pigol. Yosef abai v'kamer la'ashmai ta'ish v'rapapa la'abai. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you. On the other hand, I also know a Mishnah. Hashokh l'sato l'fnim v'lach machutz l'choma. Okay, carbon tota that has the 40 loaves of bread that accompany it. I shech the carbon tota, but the bread is outside. The bread is not imbued with kedusha. The bread is imbued with the kedusha seguf with the shechitas of the carbon tota. Shech the achelo karma paneh betanur. Let's say I shech the carbon tota before we baked the loaves. Ve'afilu karma kulan chutz me'achas mehen. Or let's say all 40 loaves are baked except for one of the loaves. Lo kiddush alechem. So the lechem is not mekudash. In other words, for the lechem to be imbued with the kedushas agov, all 40 loaves have to be in the azara and fully baked. Shech lechutz zmanu v'chutzim kama kiddush alechem. So if I shecht either chutz zmanu chutzim kama, otherwise known as pigel, so in either one of those circumstances, kiddush alechem. So what did we just learn together? That you did a shechita with pigel, normally rendering the shechita a disqualified shechita, meaning the carbon's disqualified, and yet it's still going to imbue the lechem with kedushas aguf. So you're telling me that the pigol is not going to change the status of me'ila? What are you talking about? We just learned together that a shechita's pigol is going to change the status of the bread of the lachmei todah, giving it the status of Kedusha Saguf. Okay. Ama pigel maisi lide mi'ila. You say that pigel is in fact going to introduce mi'ila, because remember now with the loaves of the bread, prior to the shechting of the carbon toadah, it's just Kedushas Damim. It only is going to be imbued with Kedushas Aguf so that the Kohanim can eat it only with the shechita of the carbon toadah. And it, even though this is a shechita's pigel, it's still going to imbue the bread with Kedushas Aguf, making it subject to Me'ila. So Ishtik, when he hears this question, he's quiet, he doesn't know how to respond. Ki asal kamid de Rabbi Abba, amar le bezrika. So, and when he presents the question over to Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba says to him, we're going to make a very simple distinction. If it's shechita with pigel, so what have we done so far? We haven't done well, I'll tell you that much. However, as we know, pigel only makes full manifestation, only full realization, only after you do all the avodah successfully. So even though you did shechita bepigel, so at this point in time, there's still more to go. There still is the Kabbalah, the Halacha, the Zrikas Adam. And that can all be done without pigel. Or, by the way, parenthetically, it could be that it's not going to be done at all. Meaning at this point in time, we're only at the first stage of the Avoda, the first of the four steps of the Avoda. However, if the Zrika is done bepigel, so now we are at the point of realization. It's no longer a question, is there going to be pigel? Now, there is pigel, meaning we're here. We're at the point of Zrika. The Zrika Saddam was done by pigel, and so therefore now we have totally disqualified the carbon. Consequently, when it comes to a shlamim, so that means that the shlamim was totally rendered a disqualified carbon shlamim, so there's not going to be a me'ila on the imurim. We'll go in the other direction. Let's talk about a kashe kadashim, like a carbon ola. So now, by having done the Zrika in a state of pigel, so that means to say now, let's talk about Chatas and Asham. Having done the Zrika in a state of pigel, so now we have not allowed the Kohanim to eat it, and so therefore the Isra Mila remains by the Chatas and Asham, is not going to be lifted. So in a scenario where it was pigel to its point of fruition, so then it doesn't change any statuses. Previously, when you cited to me the Mishnah regarding the toda, and it was shechted, the carbon toda was shechted in a state of pigel. Since we're only at stage one and we haven't reached the point of realization, so the Gemara now is suggesting, so therefore it is not going to be. We have not yet disqualified the carbon as of yet, and so therefore that's why it could be different in such a scenario. Okay, let's quickly recap today. We finished up our discussion of Ulam Rav Yochanan, an animal that dies, a carbon that dies, is subject to Milah Midrabanan. The Gemara says, do I know that from Ulam Rav Yochanan? Don't I know from Mishnayos? And the Gemara, like yesterday said, the Mishnayos themselves are incomplete. I still need Ulam Rav Yochanan to talk about a standard carbon. Our second topic for today was going back to the debate between Rav and Rav Yosef, shechting a kadshe kadashim in the south side of the Mizbeach. So certainly that was wrong. That part is clear. However, if we thunder through the avoda and put the carbon on the mizbech, would the mizbech tolerate it? It's machlokes between Rav and Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef's position is that the mizbech would tolerate it. Im alu lo yardu. But and then over the course of this morning, Rav Yosef asked a series of questions of mishnayos. He put three mishnayos together to construct a question against Rabba. And the Gemara says, and these questions are so good, the Gemara says that Rebbe's position is seemingly refuted. And finally, the last point that we covered today was the statement of Rav Gidal Marav, that if Zrika, when Zrika was done, it was done by Pigol, so since it disqualifies the carbon, it does not change the Me'ila status in either direction. By Yishlamim, it doesn't bring about Me'ila to the Imurim, and by Chatas and Ashim, it doesn't remove Me'ila by the Basar.